Good morning, everyone. You are very welcome to Dublin Unitarian Church for our service. Hello to everyone watching on our webcam and to those of you listening later in the week on our recordings page on our website. My name is Gavin Byrne and I'm a member of this congregation. Our opening words are from Ralph Waldo Emerson. We have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. The whole human family is bathed with an element of love like a fine ether. How many persons we meet in houses whom we scarcely speak to, yet whom we honor and who honor us. How many we see in the street or sit with in church, whom, though silently, we warmly rejoice to be with. Read the language of these wandering eye-beams. The heart knoweth. We now light our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian faith. A chalice lit in our midst is a symbol of our liberal faith, a faith built on the foundation of freedom, reason, and tolerance, a faith sustained by acts of kindness and justice, a faith that visions a world flourishing with equality for all her people, a faith that demands the living out of goodness, a faith that requires thoughtfulness, a faith of wholeness. This tiny flame is the symbol of the spark
of all this within each of us. Amen. Let us sing now hymn number 44. We sing of golden moments. Our first reading this morning will now be read by Emer.
I don't usually make New Year's resolutions, but having read this, I might change my mind, maybe on Bridget's Day. Anyway, it's about gratitude, and it's adapted from the book Act of Hope by Joanna Macy and Chris Johnston, Buddhist teachers. The definition by Robert Emmons defines gratitude as a felt sense of wonder, thankfulness, and appreciation for life. If you're feeling low, it might seem a stretch to go that far, something so positive. Yet recognizing the gifts in your own life is profoundly steadying, increases your psychological buoyancy, and helps you to maintain your balance. Put simply, our gladness to be here when the continuation of life itself is in doubt kindles and rekindles our resilience. Our essential wonder at the root of life empowers us to face the unprecedented perils of our time. Recent research has shown that people who experience high level of gratitude tend to be happier and more satisfied with their lives. Are they grateful because they're happy, or does gratitude make people happy? To find out, volunteers were asked to keep a gratitude journal in which they regularly wrote down and recorded events that made them feel good. Controlled studies have shown that this simple intervention can have a profound and reliable effect on our mood. The process of keeping a gratitude journal focuses our attention away and makes us appreciate that we're being resourced by things in our life and from within ourselves. If each evening before we go to bed, we ask ourselves, what happened today that I'm glad about? We start searching for positive moments. They might be small things, such as a conversation with a friend or seeing a bird flying over, or it may be the satisfaction of completing a task. When we're busy, moments like this just disappear. Simple steps like keeping a gratitude journal trains our minds in a basic capacity for awe and reverence, thus undermining the impact of panic or paralysis. Experienced gratitude is a learnable skill, and we can get better at it. It isn't dependent on things going well, and it's not dependent on other people. While gratitude leads to an increase in happiness and life satisfaction, materialism, its opposite, in other words, placing a higher value on material possessions than on relationships, has exactly the opposite effect. Gratitude is about acknowledging the gifts we already have. The advertising industry undermines this by convincing us that we're missing out on something. On one website for marketing professionals, the advertiser's law of dissatisfaction is described as, the job of advertisers is to create dissatisfaction in its audience. If people are happy with who they are and where they are in life and what they've got, they just aren't customer material. Research shows that people living in countries that spend more on advertising tend to be less satisfied with their lives. Depression has reached epidemic proportions. The consumer lifestyle is not just wrecking our world, it's actually making us unhappy. So, can gratitude play a part in our rehabilitation? By promoting feelings of satisfaction with what we have, it counters the feeling of insecurity and pulls us out of the rat race. It shifts our focus from what's missing to what we already are experiencing. Therefore, if we were to design a cultural therapy to lift us out of depression and at the same time help reduce consumerism, it would surely involve cultivating our ability to experience gratitude. At times, gratitude comes easily to us all. If you're falling in love and things are going great and you're enjoying life, gratitude is easy. But what if there's not much to feel happy about? What about the times when the landscape of your life looks pretty grim? If you're facing tragedy in your life or your family's life or in the world, searching for reasons to be grateful might feel close to denial. But we don't have to feel grateful for everything. We just have to take the bigger picture and realize there is positive and negative. To find our power to see the hard parts clearly and to respond constructively to what's going on in our lives, we need to draw on resources that bring out the best of us. And gratitude can do this. It's a resource we can tap into at any moment.
So our story for all of us who are young at heart, it is called Thou Shalt Not Lie. So once upon a time, in the center of the big blue digital ocean, there was an island called Webworld. Now on this island lived a little puffin called Pip. Webworld was amazing because of the instant vines. Now, if you whispered a message into the vine's flower, zap, it would travel instantly to every other house and device on the island. And that was great for sharing happy birthday wishes or funny pictures, and also was great for telling jokes. It was great for knowing what was going on and making sure that no one missed out on anything. But one day, a grumpy crab named Crank wanted the beach all to himself. So he whispered into the vine, "Beware, the sand is turning into hot lava at noon. Everyone must stay inside and away from the beach." Of course, the instant vines didn't know it was a lie. They just did their job and zap, 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 the message flew into every device and into every home. Now Pip read the message on his vine. "Lava sand," he gasped, and he was scared. He immediately told his neighbor, Mrs. Turtle, "Don't go out, the sand is dangerous." And soon everyone was panicked, hiding indoors, even though the beautiful beach was perfectly safe. And Crank the Crab laughed as he enjoyed the beach, the empty beach, all for himself. And of course, this is called disinformation, a lie told on purpose to trick people. When Pip told Mrs. Turtle he wasn't trying to lie, he thought he was helping. This is misinformation, spreading something false by mistake because you believe it is true. So finally, Pip's wise grandmother arrived. She saw the empty beach and the panicked puffin. "Pip, why are you hiding?" "The sand is lava, Grandma. The vines said so." Grandma looked at the cool, wet sand. "Pip," she said gently, "just because a message travels fast doesn't mean it's true. Some folks toss litter into the ocean, and some folks toss lies into the vines." She taught Pip the golden rule of the web world. Before you believe anything, even a scary message, and definitely before you pass it on, switch off the vine and look out of the window. Check the facts with a grown-up if you need to, but also someone you can trust. And Pip looked out of the window. The beach was, of course, safe. And he went outside and built the biggest sandcastle ever, learning that the truth is always worth checking.
thou shalt not lie. So now let us open our hymn books once more and sing hymn number 134, Our World is One World. My reading is At the River Clarion by Mary Oliver. I sat by a river and asked it about God. But what it told me changed everything I thought I knew about holiness. I won't pretend to have all the answers about the divine. I don't know if God wears robes or speaks in thunder, if heaven has gates or if prayers need specific words to be heard. But I'll tell you what I learned on an ordinary afternoon that became an extraordinary day. I was sitting in a river, the Clarion, they called it, perched on a water-splashed stone that had been smoothed by 1,000 years of current. I had nowhere to be and nothing to prove, so I just sat and I listened. At first, there was only the sound of moving water, the kind of white noise that usually fades into the background of consciousness. But I stayed. I kept listening, and slowly the river began to speak in a language I'd forgotten I knew. Every time the water struck a stone, it had something to say. Not in words exactly, but in a voice nonetheless. The water itself was singing. Even the moss trailing beneath the surface, swaying in the current, like green hair in invisible wind, was whispering something urgent and true. I leaned closer. I let the afternoon stretch long, and very slowly, like dawn arriving without announcement, it became clear to me what they were saying. Said the river, I am part of holiness. And the stone beneath me, worn smooth by service and time, replied, and I too. Even the moss, the smallest and most overlooked, whispered with quiet certainty, and I too. And in that moment, I understood. Holiness wasn't somewhere else. Not locked in buildings or reserved for mountaintops or granted to only the chosen few. It was right here. It was everything. The river that carved the valley, the stone that held its ground, the moss that asked for nothing but gave oxygen and beauty anyway. And if the river is holy, and the stone is holy, and even the moss is holy, then maybe, just maybe, so are we. Not because we earned it or deserved it or did everything right, but because we're here. Because we're part of this same stunning, sacred, interconnected whole. I sat by that river asking questions. I left knowing that I was somehow part of the answer. For our reflection this morning, if that wasn't enough, I'm going to share Rumi's poem, The Guest House. Now here he invites us, like Mary Oliver, to welcome all aspects of human experience, the good and the bad, which can lead to inner peace and wisdom. And after I've read it, we will have some moments of silence, after which Josh will share some music. The guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. They may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. I think that this is one of those weeks where it might be remiss of someone given this privilege to stand before you to not at least mention the issues facing our fractured world. But first, a brief reflection on some things that I've been busy doing in my studies. The idea that God is present in creation was condemned in 1552 when Servetus, one of the first recorded dissenting nonconformist Unitarian thinkers, wrote, "God so contains in himself the essence of all things, and that by his own essence alone, without another creature, he can here manifest himself as fire, as air, as stone, as amber, as a twig, as a flower, as whatever else you will." Now, they called it pantheism, the idea that God is in all things. But his point was that no one, certainly not an institution, not a monarchy or no state, can contain the sacred. And Servetus spent a lifetime, literally a lifetime, challenging the strict puritanical theology of Calvin, which held that humanity is inherently evil and inherently sinful. And religious practice and belief at that time was fixed, it was unchangeable, it was carved in stone and led by men of complete and utter self-righteousness. Servetus said that at no time can you say, "The world is this," for before you have finished saying it, the world has changed. Now, Servetus' life was eventually taken from him when both Catholic and Orthodox Protestants joined together to see his end. And what followed in Unitarian history was a clear battle between Orthodox, mostly Protestant thinkers and leaders, and others who strived for the establishment of an open religious movement that celebrated freedom, conscience, tolerance, and a belief in the inherent goodness of humanity. And the 16th and 17th centuries stressed reason when thinking about religious and spiritual matters was of utmost importance, reason, rationality. The Transcendentalists then arrived on the Unitarian scene some time after to rebalance how we think about the sacred. And they reclaimed some of Servetus' spirit and proclaimed, "God resides not in formal religion, but in nature, not in religious rites, but in persons." Now, I know that the word God is controversial or problematic for some people. So I bring Mary Oliver as she sits by the River Clarion and listens to the river's voices. She conveys the idea of finding holiness in nature, just holiness. And she emphasizes the importance of paying attention to the world. The divine, the sacred, does not reside in sanctuaries and rituals, in doctrines or laws, but in all of the natural and often ordinary moments of our lives. How wonderful. Kairos, the title for this address, it's a Greek word, and it means the exact time, the critical time, or an appointed time. As Ecclesiastes might suggest, there is a time to speak and a time to be silent. I'm tempted to put Kairos as the title for every address these days. And in Christian theology, Kairos has come to mean an appointed time, a moment of grace and opportunity for an important decision or an important action. And grace, which has been mentioned here many times, and happens to be my most favourite holy idea, is an unexpected, an unasked for, even an undeserved gift. It's hard not to pay attention to what is happening in the world, and taking the prophet who wrote Ecclesiastes at their word, this is a time to speak. I think it is appropriate to speak about what is happening in our fractured world. Before I go on, as always, please feel free to reject or disagree with some or all of what I say. But I do offer it sincerely. How do we understand time? Is it linear or is it more of a circle? We can only advance when we learn from the past, lest it repeat its very worst episodes. Here's what I think we are facing and what some are fighting. And let us start with believing what is happening right in front of our eyes. From the Middle East to the Americas, everything is on the table, including violence, if it serves my political agenda. We will also reinterpret the Holy Scriptures according to our political agenda. The highest human virtue is my own financial wealth. I must win by all means necessary. I will take your financial, your social, your cultural, and your mental well-being to advance my own or our own personal advantage. Because human flourishing is for the likes of me and those who support me. I will whip up culture wars that pit sister against sister, father against son, neighbor against neighbor. You will conform to my political values and theological principles, or I will come after you, and it won't end well. You will be defeated, and you will be removed from society. We have leaders who are morally bankrupt, and I am sorry if that sounds judgy. It's nothing short of deep insecurity when everything I do is like nothing ever seen before. The best, the biggest, the hottest. It's called spoofing. Spoofing like no one has ever seen before. Where loving your country is the greatest virtue. And we must bow and scrape to such people. Because if we don't, it may harm our economic health. If we do, are we conspiring with a culture of hate, of misogyny, of racism, of transphobia, of homophobia, of xenophobia? And what about this rush toward conquest, toward empire and protectionism? I speak because this harms flourishing human community. It harms our fragile environment, which is already struggling under our insatiable consumerist culture. And is this creeping belligerence already at our shores? We don't have an identifiable far-right leader in Ireland yet. That's because a suitably qualified and charismatic person hasn't emerged yet. But if the disparate group of far-right characters making waves in Ireland right now organize and overcome their differences, this country is ripe for the emergence of a belligerent political organization with a narrative we never thought possible in our beautiful and peaceful, charitable and benevolent land. The green and orange symbol of two separate religious traditions on this island is used, ironically, not as a beacon of hope and diversity and peace, but a call to create a monocultural, closed and exclusionary community where we will all be the same. It is not national pride. It is collective hate designed to intimidate. Whatever spiritual or religious tradition you embrace, We might agree that at the center of every good and worthy tradition is the notion, the belief in the goodness of humanity, and that every person has the right to dignity and the right to their share of creation. And in that context, I bring you one simple character from Scripture, a prophet honored by Jews, Muslims, and Christians. That's the prophet Amos, who spoke 800 years before Jesus Christ appeared on the scene. Let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Without a commitment to radical justice and honest-to-God righteousness, he said, all your religion is meaningless. I think he challenges the notion that religion and politics should not be spoken in the same breath or treated as two sides of the one coin. Do we confine our membership of a spiritual community to singing hymns and nourishing our souls and contemplating the ultimate questions we have about life? Is it a personal and a private thing? We don't come here to be alone. We come here to be community. That's what Emerson meant in The Heart Knoweth. There is a silent knowing between us, which is proof of human connection that's not only immediate, but reaches out across the whole human family. If we believe that silence is our only response to the state of the world and the conflicts among nations, then I ask, what business did Daniel O'Connell have when he boldly declared, I am the advocate of civil and religious liberty all over the globe and wherever tyranny exists. I am the friend of liberty in every clime, in every class and color. My sympathy with distress is not confined within the narrow bounds of my own green island. This one notion inspired Frederick Douglass, who in turn inspired Martin Luther King Jr., who in turn spurred a whole movement that continues to inspire today. What business was it of the Dunstore's workers who understood the moral imperative to boycott goods sourced from an unjust apartheid economy? What business was it of Unitarian minister Theodore Parker, who said that the arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice? What business does Greta Thunberg have in shining a necessary light on the climate crisis that affects us all? And what business did the author of the Gospel of Matthew have in recording that Jesus restated the golden rule and delivered the radical beatitudes to a gathered throng of over 2,000 people 2,000 years ago? What business did the Choctaw Nation have in sending funds to aid the impoverished and starving Irish during the 1840s? What business did James Houghton, who sat here in these pews advocating against slavery? What business did Margaret Huxley, also from our congregation, have in raising funds here to build a social housing development nearby? And more recently, what business did this community have in actively supporting refugees seeking a better life in Ireland? These are simply examples of human compassion. It is normal. It is a human trait to extend the hand of support to strangers. For some, it is a religious imperative. For others, it is just part of being human. We are all interconnected, linked, I believe anyway, by a sacred thread. And if I truly believe that, It compels me to advocate for justice and mercy for all in whatever way I can. There is just one human community, and we share just one planet, because we haven't found an alternative yet. Besides, when a major politician opens their mouth, you and I are directly affected, whether it's the cost of your heating or the security of your children's jobs or the well-being and health of our planet. Words matter. Careful the things you say, because children will listen. So finally, why should we be concerned? Why shouldn't we act? Because Mary Oliver said, we're here. Because we're part of this same stunning, sacred, interconnected whole. So join something, say something that you care deeply about. Share your love with those who need it, and tell us about it. Be assured that it is in the culmination of the small things that change the world. A few words from our Unitarian ancestor, Thoreau. Be not simply good. Be good for something. Amen. Now let us sing once more hymn number 169, We Shall Overcome, after which we'll have the collection. Thank you, everyone, for your offering this morning. And thank you to everyone who contributed to this service this morning. Thank you, choir. And you are all invited to join us downstairs for tea and coffee. Pam leads our weekly service of reflection here in the church every Wednesday from 1:05 p.m. And you can also watch these sessions and join in these sessions live on our webcam. Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus is this month's book club book. They'll meet in the vestry on the last Wednesday of the month, which is the 28th of January. The Heart and Soul Contemplative Spiritual Gatherings will begin tomorrow evening at 7:30 for those who have signed up. The door will be open from 7:15. And finally, the Damer and Singleton Committee will meet after the service this morning in the vestry. So let us now have one final hymn. It is number 163, For the Earth Forever Turning. As we extinguish our chalice flame, let us affirm the beauty of the world in which we live, the unity of life and our interdependence with the rest of creation. We affirm our responsibility to care for and protect our planet and all who live in her for future generations. We affirm the uniqueness and equal dignity of every person, as we continue to seek truth and wisdom. Amen. Thank you.